All right, welcome to the Deep Dive, everybody. Today we're going to be talking about a pretty fascinating case, Westinghouse v. Gulf Oil. You know, this case might seem like just a regular old corporate battle at first glance, but for all you law students out there, it's a really amazing example of how complicated things can get with conflicts of interest and when attorneys have to be disqualified from a case.
Absolutely. And, you know, this case isn't just some historical footnote either. It really changed how courts look at these situations where a law firm might be in a tricky spot because their past work for one client could actually end up hurting that client if they represent someone else who's now against them. It's a core piece of how legal ethics work in practice, even today.
Exactly. And that's why we're taking a deep dive into it. We're going to go through the whole story behind this case, explain the super important substantial relationship test that came out of it, talk about the ethical issues it brings up for lawyers, and really highlight the key takeaways that you all, as future legal eagles, can use in your careers. The Westinghouse v. Gulf Oil decision basically set new boundaries on what counts as a conflict of interest when a firm's past cases are connected to their current ones. So are you ready to unpack this?
I am. Let's do it.
Let's get into it. So first, what's the backstory here? What's the basic conflict that kicked off this whole legal battle?
Okay, so the main issue is that Westinghouse, a huge company, sued Gulf Oil and another company called United Nuclear Corporation, or UNC, for antitrust violations. Basically, Westinghouse was saying that Gulf and UNC were working together to mess with uranium prices, which you can imagine led to a massive lawsuit with tons of money on the line.
Makes sense. So we've got Westinghouse going after Gulf Oil and this other company, UNC. What's the part that makes this case so important for law students?
Well, it all comes down to UNC's lawyers. They were represented by a firm, we'll just call the Big B firm, to keep things simple. Big B, Stevenson, Carpenter, and Kraut was their full name. On the surface, it seems pretty normal, right? A company hires a law firm to defend them in a lawsuit.
Yeah,
but
there's a catch.
Oh, there's a big catch. You see, before they said yes to representing UNC in this lawsuit against Gulf, the Big B firm actually had Gulf Oil as a client for a long time.
Wait, really? Mm-hmm. They were working for Gulf before they switched sides?
Yeah, for 5 years, from 1971 to 1976. Big B was basically on Gulf's payroll, doing legal work for them.
Wow. And we're not just talking about some small, random legal tasks, right? Our sources show that Big B was handling some pretty significant stuff for Gulf, things that were directly related to their uranium business.
Right, things like securing mining patents for Gulf's uranium properties, writing up important lease agreements, and even representing Gulf in arguments about land ownership, environmental rules, and lobbying on taxes. All of this was specifically tied to their work in the uranium industry.
So they were really deep in Gulf Oil's business, specifically their uranium operations. I can already see why this might be an issue.
It's a huge issue. Because even though Big B's earlier work for Gulf wasn't specifically about antitrust laws or price fixing, you have to think about all the inside knowledge they must have gotten about how Gulf's uranium business worked. Things like how much uranium they had, how much they could produce, and what their goals were in the whole uranium market.
I see where you're going with this.
Yeah.
Having that kind of insider info could be a huge advantage, especially if you're now representing someone going up against your old client.
You got it. And that's exactly why Gulf Oil was concerned. They saw this law firm, who knew a lot of their secrets, suddenly working for the other side in a major lawsuit. And it turned out that part of UNC's strategy was to try and shift some of the blame onto Gulf. So Gulf decided to do something about it.
They weren't just going to sit back and watch, right?
Not at all. Gulf filed a motion asking the court to disqualify the Big B firm from representing UNC. They argued that Big B, having worked for Gulf before, created a really clear conflict of interest. And this whole thing started in the district court for the Northern District of Illinois.
What did the district court decide? Did they agree with Gulf?
Surprisingly, no. The district court said it was fine for Big B to keep representing UNC. They said the work Big B did for Gulf in the past wasn't substantially related to the current lawsuit about price fixing. It seems like they were just focusing on the very specific antitrust accusations, nothing else.
So they were looking at it in a very narrow way, but it sounds like that wasn't the end of the story.
It wasn't. Gulf wasn't happy with that decision, so they appealed to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. And the Seventh Circuit, thankfully, took a much more careful look at the whole situation. This is why Westinghouse v. Gulf Oil is still such a big deal in legal ethics.
Okay, so the Seventh Circuit steps in. What did they do differently? How did they reach a different conclusion from the district court?
The Seventh Circuit really dug deep into the substantial relationship test. They said to figure this out, you had to do three things. First, you get to go back and really understand what the lawyer or law firm did for their old client. What kind of work were they doing, and what information would they have had access to?
So in this case, it was all that work Bigbee did for Gulf on their uranium business, right? All those patent applications, leases, and environmental permits and stuff.
Exactly. The second part is figuring out if it's reasonable to think that the old client would have shared confidential info with their lawyer when they were working on those earlier cases. So you have to ask, during those 5 years that Bigbee was working for Gulf, would Gulf likely have told them secret stuff about their uranium business?
And considering the type of work they were doing, it seems pretty obvious that the answer is yes, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. Think about it. If you're helping a company secure mining rights and put together lease agreements, they're going to have to tell you pretty specific details about how much uranium they have, their production plans, and maybe even their big strategies for how they're going to play in the uranium market.
So the second part of the test is really about whether the old client likely shared sensitive info with their lawyers. What's the third and most important part of the test?
All right, the third part asks if that confidential info, the stuff that was probably shared in those earlier cases, could be relevant to the new case against the old client. This is where the Seventh Circuit saw things way differently than the district court.
So this is where the Seventh Circuit said, hold on, district court, you're missing something big. Even though Bigbee wasn't working on a case about price fixing before, the appeals court understood that knowing all about Gulf's uranium reserves and how much they could produce was really important information in an antitrust case about manipulating the uranium market.
Right. You got it. It all goes back to supply and demand. If you have inside knowledge about a company's control over a resource, like how much uranium they have and can produce, you could really use that information to argue about how the whole market works, why prices changed, or even try to say that the company you're going after actually caused the problems they're being blamed for.
And the Seventh Circuit didn't stop there, did they? They took it a step further with their reasoning, right?
Yeah, they did. Once you showed there's a substantial relationship between those past cases and the new one, the court said you basically assumed that confidential info was shared. And get this. The burden of proof then shifts to the lawyer or law firm to prove they didn't get any confidential info or that they never had access to it.
Which is a pretty high bar to clear. You'd have to prove a negative, basically.
Exactly. The court was essentially saying, we're not going to force the former client to spill all their secrets in court just to show that their old lawyers might use those secrets against them.
Yeah.
That substantial relationship is enough to say we need to be extra careful here. And that makes a lot of sense ethically, too, right?
Yeah, you want to make sure you're protecting that client confidentiality. It's like the golden rule of being a lawyer.
For sure. But back to the case. The district court seemed to think everything was fine just because Bigbee wasn't working on the exact same legal issue, like antitrust versus patents. So what was wrong with that approach?
Right. According to the Seventh Circuit, what big picture idea were they missing?
The Seventh Circuit said the district court's view was way too limited, way too focused on tiny details. They got stuck on specific legal terms instead of looking at the bigger picture. The facts of the case and whether confidential info could be misused. The appeals court got it. Even if the legal claims are different, there can still be a conflict if the underlying facts are connected, especially when you're talking about a client's sensitive business secrets.
So they really emphasize that you have to look at the whole situation, not just the legal labels. What about the idea of getting consent from the client? Couldn't Gulf have given Bigbee permission to represent other clients in the past, even if those clients were against Gulf?
That's a really important point, and the Seventh Circuit addressed it directly. They said that even if Gulf had signed something in the past, giving Bigbee general permission to represent other clients, and a lot of times those agreements are pretty standard and vague, it doesn't mean they automatically gave up their right to keep their info confidential. Just because you let a firm represent other clients doesn't mean you're saying, go ahead, use my secrets against me later on if it helps you win.
So even if there's some old document saying Gulf was okay with Bigbee representing other clients, it didn't mean Bigbee had a free pass to use Gulf's confidential info against them in a related lawsuit.
Exactly. The court understood that those general consent forms can't really cover every possible situation, especially when you're talking about something as complex as switching sides in a big legal battle. It's not like Gulf could have predicted everything that might happen later on.
So what's the biggest takeaway for all the future lawyers out there listening to this deep dive? What's the key lesson from Westinghouse v. Gulf Oil that they should keep in mind as they start their careers?
The most important thing to remember is this. Anytime you're thinking about taking on a new client, especially if it means going against an old client in some way, you have to ask yourself a really important question. Could the work I did for that old client, even if it seems unrelated, give my new client an unfair advantage? Is there any chance that I learned confidential stuff from that old client that could now be relevant in this new case, even in a small way?
So basically, think about the bigger picture and all the connections, not just the specific legal issues involved.
Exactly. And if the answer to either of those questions is even a little bit yes, you need to be extremely careful. There's a good chance you could get disqualified from the case. And you should definitely talk to someone about the ethics of the situation before you make any decisions.
It sounds like the best advice is to play it safe. If you have any doubts about whether there's a conflict of interest, the smartest move is probably to say no to representing that new client.
Couldn't agree more. Protecting your client's confidential info and keeping the legal system fair and trustworthy should always be more important than winning a case or making more money for your firm.
So we've gone over the whole story of Westinghouse v. Gulf Oil, and it's really clear that this case is a landmark decision in legal ethics. It made the substantial relationship test much stronger and more concrete, and that test is now part of official rules for lawyers, like ABA Model Rule 1.9. It's a big warning to law firms that even what seems like a small overlap between their past and present cases can cause huge problems.
Absolutely. The core principle here is all about protecting what clients tell their lawyers in confidence. This case makes it crystal clear that lawyers have to take that duty seriously, even if it means turning down a new client that could be really profitable or helpful to their firm. Hurting a former client or damaging the public's trust in the legal profession is way worse than missing out on a new case. And for all you future lawyers, the message is loud and clear. Always think ahead and carefully consider any potential conflicts of interest. Don't limit your thinking to just the legal issues. Look at the whole context and remember any information you might have learned from past clients.
That's a fantastic summary. And to leave you all with something to think about, consider how this landmark case applies to the legal world today. We're seeing more and more specialization within the legal profession, and the way clients and lawyers interact is always changing. So how might this substantial relationship test need to change and be understood in new areas of law and in these more complex client relationships? It's a really important question for you to keep in mind as you continue your legal studies and move into your future careers. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us.
Thanks for having me. It's been great.